When the shift boss hits that button, then you'd better look alive, 'cause the lumber comes a-rolling like the bees out of a hive. And you'll feel that sweat come pouring as each muscle screams with pain. And you'll wonder if it's worth it working on the long green chain.
Hi, I'm Mark Lernion, and thanks for checking out the Taiyi and the Green Chain podcast. Today, we're off to Quebec to talk to the founder of the Forest Leadership Initiative and Forest News Watch. Jean-Pierre Keekens is originally from Belgium, but for the last decade, he's devoted his life to figuring out Canadian forestry. He has degrees from the University of Brussels and Oxford. He was a lecturer in economic development and agricultural economics at the University of Brussels, and he's consulted on forestry policy for the European Commission, the French, Dutch, and Canadian governments. I met Jean-Pierre at his office in Old Montreal.
Jean-Pierre, how did you become interested in the forestry situation in Canada? What brought you here?
Interesting question. Good morning. I started being interested in forestry in the late 80s, and I was working then in Africa. It was a time when a lot of attention was paid to deforestation in the Congo Basin, Ivory Coast, Ghana, and other countries. And I started doing consulting work at the time. I'm a development economist by training, working for the European Commission, which is a major aid agency, and also paying attention to global developments in regard to forestry. And that was a time just prior to the Earth Summit in Rio, with a lot of talk about a global forest convention. Canada at the time was a key player in the tractations, in the negotiation towards a global forest convention. And that's how I started having interest in what Canada had to say. A few years later, I had the opportunity to move to Canada, and Canada and the U.S. being the two key producers of forest products globally, I thought it would be a good place to continue this work. And so I moved to Canada in the early 90s, and I've had since increasing interest in forestry in the country.
Yeah. You originally started your publication as Forest Certification Watch.
Yep.
Right? Can you talk about your interest in forest certification?
What happened in the late 80s was a movement towards some kind of voluntary auditing of forest practices, and several environmental groups were mostly behind that concept, and it was really to try to set norms and that would go beyond legislation, and to have some kind of a fast track getting companies to abide to higher standards of forest management that would be basically complied with, but just on a voluntary basis. And that was a very interesting concept indeed. I did several feasibility studies on this for the European Commission. It was also linked to what kind of potential restrictions could some countries put in terms of importing forest products that were not certified. What happened also at the time was a multiplication of initiatives regarding certification, in the sense that Canadian industry, first of all, was feeling very uncomfortable with the standards that were being developed largely with the leadership of the Worldwide Fund for Nature, the WWF. And so the Canadian industry developed a standard on its own, and well, along with the Canadian Standards Association. And that was a time when forest certification became a bit of an issue, and it was a defining issue for the forestry sector, because at a relatively early stage, people in the sector said, we will need some form of certification that will demonstrate that we are reasonably good corporate citizens and we can practice, we have a social license to practice forestry. So there was an early understanding that some form of certification auditing was needed. The question was, what will be the norm? And that opened basically what some people called certification wars, and it was a very, very hot issue back even 3-4 years ago in terms of what would be the standards that would be recognized in the marketplace, the standards that would be recognized by the public as a reasonable guarantee of sound forest management practices.
Now, I gather there are several certification agencies out there. What are your thoughts on the certifications that are out there now? I mean, when we spoke yesterday, you sounded just a little wary of some of the certification standards.
I'm just realizing, and we have moved with our own publication. We have gone to look at from a broader perspective at forest management and forestry sector environmental issues. I think certification has lost a lot of its steam and a lot of its interest. There is much less heated debate on it now. There are several school of thoughts about this evolution. One says that when you have a multi-stakeholder process, it's forming and then it's storming, then it's norming and it's performing. Certainly the norming stage has been reached. Is it performing these days? Maybe. I think it's very difficult to say, because what is really the impact of forest certification or forest management practices? It's hard to say, but it has certainly reached a normation stage. And we have several certification initiatives that have been adopted by companies. Companies have 3, 4, 5 years ago developed strategies. They said, okay, we are going to go with one scheme, we go with another scheme. And now it seems it's pretty stable. Things are not evolving that much in terms of, at least in terms of the forest management auditing. It's a relatively stable situation, with three schemes being very much leading in North America.
Do you have any thoughts on which one's the, I don't know, most environmental friendly, or which one's the most?
That's always the question. These schemes are different, and what has happened is that I think there were and there are still very interesting characteristics in each of the schemes that are pretty unique. And if you look at all the components of these schemes, each scheme has something to superior to the other, to the others.
Okay.
Each one has something superior. At the same time, there's been a pretty consistent position of several key environmental groups, WWF, Sierra Club, and others, to only recognize one, and basically to neglect essentially the others. It has been a strategic decision from their side, and that's why you don't have the same kind of stakeholder support for the two kind of supposedly industry-led initiatives, which are the Sustainable Forestry Initiative and the CSA program in Canada, than you have for the Forest Stewardship Council. I think there is big variability in terms of where those schemes are being applied, if regional standards have been developed or not, what kind of stakeholder input took place into the certification process. So tough to say, but what beyond my judgment about what would be good, what would be bad, what would be green and what would be less green, it seems that companies are dealing with the schemes they have chosen pretty well, whatever it is, whatever
okay.
scheme they have, and they've found a way to deal with other concerns and environmental concerns, sometimes outside the certification programs.
Now, you come at this with a very global perspective of Canadian forests. Can you talk a little bit about how, you know, the world sees Canadian forestry these days?
That's interesting. I think the pictures are always worth you know, a thousand words. And I remember I was in Brussels and invited to a meeting at the Canadian Embassy, and it was Premier Harcourt from BC at the time, and he had a very constructive meeting. It was all about Clayoquot Sound, and you had some First Nations representative, etc. And then went out of the meeting, and there was a demonstration by Greenpeace with the chainsaws and the huge pictures of the Clayoquots. And I think the Clayoquot picture has been there for a long time. And even though some jurisdictions have changed their approach, and you have the for example, the venue of variable retention in British Columbia, these pictures of Clayoquots are still somewhat present. I think also Canada has lost a lot of its leadership internationally in terms of, for example, trying to seek a global convention on forests. It was the arch proponent of the global convention, and such convention has certainly not been achieved. And Canada has taken a lower and lower profile, I think, internationally, and it may be in parallel to all the internal problems you can see with forestry in the country.
Now, what happened with that? Because you said Canada was a world leader, and that's gone away. When, how, and why, and when?
Well,
did
Canada was certainly
lose that.
How do you measure world leadership? That's Canada is certainly a leading exporting country.
Yeah.
Although the exports are going down. Canada was certainly very vocal internationally for a global forest convention. It's not very vocal anymore, I think, in terms of the international scene. I mean, it's a very complex area. There are many, many countries involved. These are kind of UN types of discussions that have very little implications domestically. Think about the feds from Ottawa that have not that many relationships even with the provinces and with the actual management practices going to discuss in Yokohama in Japan or wherever, in Bali, international forestry. But I think Canada has lost a lot of its leadership and its willingness to make a serious change internationally.
Was there a particular politician or a political party? I'm just wondering where the shift came. If you have any sense of when Canada sort of backed out?
Well, I think there was a question of real politique in the sense that the U.S. have changed their position on the Global Forest Convention, and there was a realization that there would not be a global legally binding treaty without the U.S. You know, come for the Kyoto situation.
Yeah.
You know, you can make some powers there. I think also that these discussions were taking years and years. We are talking about the run-up to the Rio summit, we are talking about the late 80s, early 90s,
yes.
And it was just this year, I think, that a legally non-binding agreement on forests was reached. So we are talking about 17 years. So a lot of different civil servants, people get bored, get tired by the file, the discussions. There has been a huge numbers of meetings, international panel on forests, international forum, forests, UN forum on forests. You have the FAO committee on forests. You have the International Tropical Timber Organization, etc., etc.
Is there such a thing as a Canadian national forest policy, or can there be in this country?
Well, the closest that has been developed is kind of an initiative by the feds, is to have a national forestry strategy coalition, and so they are trying to develop ways to measure sustainability in Canada's forest. So that is ongoing. I don't think it's very popular with several provinces. I think Quebec has never really adopted the process. I think others, I'm not sure even Alberta is very much on board. And there have been several attempts, but it's always in a kind of reporting perspective, because the jurisdiction for natural resources are the provinces, and the feds have a difficult time to deal with it.
Now, you're one of the only people I can ask this. Can you talk a little bit about the differences in the situations in the forests from province to province in Canada?
I'm sure you can talk to many more qualified people than I am. I think from the general public's perspective, there is an issue of accountability. You cannot go to check the forest practices for yourself. At some point, you need to trust someone to.
I'm just saying the different issues from province to province. Like, well, what issues are unique to Quebec as opposed to Ontario, as opposed to BC?
Goodness, the ecosystems don't are not necessarily, you know, are not discontinued because of jurisdictional borders. So of course the boreal issues in Quebec and in Ontario are very similar. Of course, BC, the coastal area, is pretty unique. So difficult to make a bold statement, but I think there have been clear, objective reports, like the Coulomb Commission in Quebec. There was a public inquiry into the way the forests were managed in Quebec, and they came out with the finding that there was 20% overexploitation. That was a dramatic finding. The other finding in Quebec is that you have protected areas that are less than 5% compared to over 10% in BC. So you have these kind of variables that can be compared pretty clearly. So you have in every single leading jurisdiction, you have issues, very serious issues, oil and gas, the tar sands in Alberta and their impacts on forests. You have the mountain pine beetle, the impact with climate change in BC. You have this over-exploitation, the limited areas and protection in Quebec and then Ontario is a place where there is a lot of concerns about endangered species, the caribou, etc.
Well, Quebec Federation Labour just came out with a statement that 10,000 jobs have been lost in Quebec over the last few years. Now, is that industrialization? Is that where the forests are being managed?
It's a Canadian-wide problem. Huh? You have huge job losses in Ontario, in BC, and it has been pictured as a perfect storm, a range of negative impacts that are the negative factors that are influencing the health of these companies, basically the viability of these companies. You have companies that had their stocks trading at 10 bucks a few years ago, and now it's trading at 1 buck. You see, this is extremely serious. Some of these companies are doing very, very badly. The exchange rate, the exports are much less lucrative because the international prices are in US dollars. You have the softwood lumber dispute that, despite a kind of a short-term benefit in terms of the repatriation of most of the funds, we are talking about export quotas or export taxes currently. You have an aging kind of industrial capacity, and you have pretty high labor costs compared to competing countries, plus you have fiber that is not growing very fast at all because this is still a pretty cold country.
And so what about the perception that this is a sunset industry? How does that impact?
Well, you know, the spin doctors will say, no, it's not a sunset industry. Think about the story about Google, you see, and how two guys managed to create a multi-billion wealth just by developing an algorithm and creating a marketing and a, you know, a way to derive revenues. That you don't have things like that going on in the forestry sector. Most of the stocks are doing extremely badly. There was a leading industry analyst who was talking at one of our conferences, Don Roberts from CIBC World Markets. He made it plain clear, the model is broken. The model is broken. The question is, can somebody fix it? There's been a pattern of low investment in research development, aging infrastructures, and basically an industry that was doing reasonably well without having to reinvent itself, but at some point it doesn't work.
Now, the conference you're talking about, you've been hosting conferences to try and inspire new leaders in the forest sector. Can you talk a little bit about that, how those came about, and what you're hoping to achieve?
Well, it started a bit by chance. We were focusing on a print newsletter, kind of an industry. I don't like to call it an industry newsletter, but most of the people buying it were from industry. And at some point, I said to myself, "Let's bring these people together." And that was in 1991. That was the first conference I organized in Montreal, and we did pretty well in terms of attendance. And so we grew the conference the second year. With second year, we were reaching about 200. We were third year, we were in Vancouver. We reached 360, and we were very pleased by the kind of attendance. These were not industry conferences. We had a kind of a broad range of participation from environmental groups, funded First Nations, small landowners, etc. And then at some point, I said to myself, "What is really the success of the conference is that people stimulate themselves intellectually and they share positive experience and they manage to find positive ways to move forward." And I think that's part of the leadership aspect that is so much lacking in this industry. My diagnosis is not really one that is shared by everyone. I was trying to get some funding from the federal government for a conference, some sponsorship money, just to bring people in to get wide representation of interest in the conference. And I was told indirectly that Canada is a leader in forestry, so we don't need a forest leadership initiative. So the diagnosis is not widely, necessarily, it's not universally shared. Having said this, people make decisions about natural resources. The challenges, the future challenges, are gigantic with climate change, adaptation to climate change. The forests will most likely need to be managed to address these challenges, not necessarily to produce fiber, but just to... So you need skilled, intelligent entrepreneurs. You need qualified people and people who are going to have an inspiration to work in that sector for this sector to survive. And I think that's where this Forest Leadership Initiative has a place, a role to play. You see, just to be a place where professionals can get inspiration and can share their concepts, their ideas. It goes much beyond a professional kind of association of foresters, and that's basically the hope with this Forest Leadership Initiative. But it has been a bumpy road to bring it to the present situation.
In terms of your diagnosis, if somebody said tomorrow, "Jean-Pierre, you're in charge of the forests," what would you do? What would you want to see?
Which forest?
Wow. Canada. Let's put you in charge of Canada's forests.
That's an impossibility to start with. The Minister of Natural Resources has very little, he has so little power in this country. They're just pouring a bit of money on research and development, which is much completely insufficient compared to the needs. But I mean, that's basically the very few things that are... It's kind of... There is an attempt right now by the feds to some extent to help mitigate some of the impacts. We don't see any kind of long-term strategy. I think Canada needs a forest strategy and a forest industry, you know, kind of an industrialization strategy. Finland has announced just, I think, late last year that their goal is by 2030, if I remember well, to double their output of forest products, to double their value. This is a tiny country, which is a much, much more kind of a dynamic country in terms of their forestry, and they intend to double their output. Canada, they don't even know where their exports are going to decline, because they don't know to where is the bottom of the present decline of the sector. So you need this kind of industrialization strategy. You know, a lot of the response is in value added. It's not just producing 2x4s for a declining housing market in the U.S. And that requires a kind of a reinvention, a very in-depth reinvention of the provincial relationships as regard to forestry, because you cannot have an industrial strategy for BC and one for Ontario and one Saskatchewan and one Alberta, etc. All of that. And this is a small country, 30 million inhabitants. So there is a lot of reinvention to take place, but I think many people have held the same kind of language as I'm doing right now for years, and it has never changed. So the root causes of the lack of change, I'm not really able to comment on them.
Okay, and here's a question I'm asking everybody. How do you feel about trees?
Well, trees are great, you see, and people hugging the trees are making a difference in this country. I think we haven't talked that much about the environmental campaigns, but they had tremendous impacts. I think also in terms of communication with the mostly urban population, it has become nearly a necessity to have environmental groups to tell people in the cities, hey, yeah, forests, they exist, you see, they need to be taken care of. So trees and tree huggers are certainly not only a subject of analysis for me, but I tend to appreciate a lot of the people working in that sector. This is one of the positive things I've taken with me for the past 10 years, is to meet genuinely interesting people and some very intelligent. Some guys were telling, okay, forestry is not rocket science. It's much more difficult than rocket science, because it combines, you know, pure science, social sciences, and it's look at the map of Canada, and of course, forests are important to the people of Canada, even if they would live in relatively urban areas.
Thank you so much.
Jean-Pierre Keekins is founder and editor of Forest News Watch and founder of the Forest Leadership Initiative. For more on both, visit forestnewswatch.com. For the Green Chain Podcast, I'm Mark Laren-Young.